Well, I think what is really exciting to me about the evolution of games as a medium is that, like, when you look at other mediums, in, like, the early stages, there is always a lot of resistance, and I think that, to a certain extent, like, marketing machine and capitalism and having predominantly, like, white men in the design and approval board sections of game development means that only certain kinds of stories get told, and for a long time, it wasn't that women weren't playing video games, there was zero defense for them, and that game communities often just express to women that they are not welcome here, and game designers express to women that they are not welcome here, and that they are just bodies and meat. And so now we're seeing the medium mature, and the people who are empowered with the knowledge and the techniques and the infrastructure and the support and the work opportunities, there's so many more diverse voices out there. And so I hope that the video game industry engages in an era of atonement.
Welcome to Latinx in Power, a podcast hosted by Thaisa Fernandes.
Welcome to Latinx in Power. Today we are talking with Javiera Cordero. Javiera is a Quest Store operations manager at Meta and a well-respected figure in the gaming community. She has a passion for design, art, and video games, and uses her experience to enhance the lives of game makers and supporting those trying to break into the industry. Javiera is dedicated to making a positive impact and inspiring others in the field. Welcome.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited with this episode. It's been a while. We have been planning. I'm so, so glad we are making it happen. So today we are going to talk more about the gaming industry and the inspiring journey of Javiera. The episode aims to provide advice for those seeking employment in the game industry, whether they are seasoned professionals or just starting out. The show will explore Javiera's personal experience and offer tips and advice for success in the exciting world of games. So, Javiera, what does it mean to be a Latina for you?
Oh, this is such a loaded question for me. I feel like all of the things that make me irrevocably Latina are my resilience and my, like, hope and my presence and my passion. And I'm someone who went through a very, like, violent poverty and economic displacement when I was growing up. I didn't get to grow up among Spanish-speaking communities, and both my parents, my father's from Peru and my mother's from Puerto Rico, but I was born in New York City and always kind of surviving in white-dominant communities where we were, like, the outsiders. And I think that persistence of joy despite adversity is my most Latinidad quality.
Yeah, I love that. And how was this process for you, seeing yourself as a Latina? It was something that since the beginning you had this sense, oh, I'm part of the Latin America, I'm also American. Like, how was this process for you? Because for me, it happened like 9 years ago when I moved to the U.S. I was like, oh, I'm a Latina now, but I never have this sense.
I know. Oh, my God. It's so funny because I feel the most Latina when I'm around people who are not. And only then do I, like, understand that a lot of my cultural habits and, like, behaviors and, like, proclivities, or how loud I talk a natural volume, or they're just things that I never, I think that when you grow up around people who look and talk like you, you can't really see yourself in other people's eyes. But in contrast to whiteness is when I feel the most Latina. And I wish that the qualities that I have ascribed to Latinidad are not, like, I think that they're qualities that everyone can enjoy, but I think that it's just a habit of, like, a collection of people that are, like, fundamentally mixed to their core and have survived imperialist violence and oppression for thousands of years. So I think it makes sense that we do have some defining traits.
Totally agree with you. Changing a little bit the subject, I want to learn more. How did your passion for video games start?
Video games are the most important thing in my life. When I was growing up, we were really poor. We moved around over 30 times before I was age 12. And I didn't have very many things in my life that were consistent or that, like, persisted across time. But my memory cards did. Like, my progress in my games did. And the worlds that games allowed me to inhabit, the characters that I met in those games, like, those were constant characters in my life, and I learned how to read through playing video games. I gained a lot of skills around communication and literacy by playing games, and so for me, games allowed me to access a lot of my own raw appetite for learning, and it just gave me a lot of tools to support myself. So I feel like simultaneously indebted to games and then also just deeply fascinated by what people can create. I do write some, but I'm not a writer and I'm not an artist and I'm not a designer. But when there is this like holy convergence of audio and art and animation and design and being able to make your presence matter in a world and have the world echo back to you that you, the player, also matter, I think that games are such a beautiful and personal experience. And so for me, it was always that. It was always a means of having my agency as a person honored. And I think for a lot of people, like, games may not be that. Like, it may just be like a fun hobby of pressing A and watching XYZ happen, and that's where the joy lies in it. But for me, the magic is that games can help disarm me and other people who play them of our preconceptions and I like to call them empathy machines, where you can use games and the interaction that runs on to tell unique stories and to create authorship, where normally in any other medium, it would just be a passive observer experience. And I love that when you stop paying attention to a game, you are not able to proceed. That, like, games are inherently consent-based. So for me, games gave me a very rich, fertile playground where I could test out a lot of my own theories and ideas. And it was just oftentimes the only place of empowerment that I experienced growing up.
That's really interesting. I think I never thought about that. When you were talking about it, I thought about movies and music, because they can also help you to be transported to another time, bring you memories and etc. But it's different. It's still different from video games, because video games, you have control, right? You can kind of like define the destiny or whatever, be part of what is happening. That's so interesting. I never thought about it.
Yeah, I think that when you use that vocabulary, you think about games as a consent required medium of storytelling. I think that's really powerful, because it means that the player is culpable in the events that happen, or at the very least, the events are driven by their actions. And on some level, it feels like a fundamental kindness to acknowledge the agency of the person who is engaging with the art.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. For the kids listening to us, give this podcast to your parents and your family. I think I was lucky. I was very lucky, because video games were a huge part of my life as well. And I have a lot of good memories playing with my brother, with my father. And I have really good memories growing up, and we were always playing video games. But I was very lucky, because my family kind of liked that, or they didn't bother that I was playing video games. But I know that this is not a reality to some kids. I'm not sure if things are changing now. I hope it is changing. But yeah, I'm just thinking about that.
Well, I think what is really exciting to me about the evolution of games as a medium is that, like, when you look at other mediums, in like the early stages, there is always a lot of resistance. And I think that to a certain extent, like, marketing machine and capitalism and having predominantly like white men in the design and approval board sections of game development means that only certain kinds of stories get told. And for a long time, it wasn't that women weren't playing video games. There was zero defense for them, and that game communities often just express to women that they are not welcome here, and game designers express to women that they are not welcome here, and that they are just bodies and meat. And so now we're seeing the medium mature, and the people who are empowered with the knowledge and the techniques and the infrastructure and the support and the work opportunities, there's so many more diverse voices out there. And so I hope that the video game industry engages in an era of atonement for several decades of just a lot of real harm and just really negative stereotypes that have been perpetuated. And like, games, like any other medium of art, respond responsible for the value systems that it espouses, and especially games that reward the player for a certain set of actions. When a game decides to choose what kinds of actions it's going to reward the player with, it is creating a value system. And so I think that as we mature as storytellers and as we become more aware of the impact that games have, we can just ultimately tell better stories.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope, I really, really, really hope so. I think this is a great timing for this happening. And before this episode, we had a great conversation about changing careers and all the preparation required. I think things now are changing so fast, economic state and tech. There's a lot happening right now. So I wanted to talk more about the subject and pick your brain. So which advice would you give to someone looking for a job at the moment?
My advice is get organized. Use a calendar. If that's the only thing I tell the person listening to this podcast, that will serve you so far. When I was looking for work in games, I say that I was looking for work for 8 years, but I wasn't really engaging in any kind of meaningful strategy. I didn't know the questions that I should have been asking at the time. And so I think when people are searching for a job in games, they have this illusion that I think it fundamentally comes down to a lack of empathy for the person who has to look at applications for a job. And if a company says, we are looking for XYZ skills, and then you show up and you just submit a random template cover letter that does nothing to acknowledge the explicit vocabulary, taxonomy, skills, the tools that discipline relies on, you are essentially expressing to them that you have done zero research, that you don't actually understand what your role entails, that you don't have any industry awareness, and fundamentally you're just wasting and disrespecting their time. So I think the greatest thing that can help someone who's looking for a job in games is to really establish a community, a rich community. And if networking is a word that doesn't vibe well with your spirit, then reject it and use the word community. Because when I look at my LinkedIn now, where I have like close ties with thousands of game developers, my LinkedIn feed is just nonstop job opportunities. People who work in games are so passionate about what they do, and they want to work with great people. And so when you build relationships with every single game developer, that person becomes an extra, like, repeating network of opportunities that come their way. And so there's like this twofold step of understanding what is expected of your role and the seniority level that you're looking for, and understanding like what are the tools that like you have to show up with. And it's okay if you didn't go to school, it's okay if you didn't get a degree, but there's still so much work that you can do. There's a lot of power in people's hands to establish a community, to ask questions, to write those questions down on paper and start engaging in a linear process of slowly filling in the gaps in their knowledge. I think that's the thing that I see people struggling with, is that I see a lot of people saying, oh, I applied to 400 jobs. I'm like, that's actually not a badge of honor. That doesn't mean that you're doing it well. What that means is that you are shotgunning applications. You're not taking any time to express any level of meaningful exchange with a company that expresses that you understand what's important to that company and that there's actual alignment between your values and the values of that company. I think that there is an authentic way to write a meaningful cover letter that expresses to a company the kind of work that you want to do and the kind of workplace that you want to inhabit. And when you allow people to see your values and what's important to you, it allows other people to find you. And so there's a lot of people who are engaging in this work of finding jobs in the game industry, and they're doing it alone. And so my message is to stop doing it alone and to start learning from your mistakes.
I love what you said about community. We use the word networking a lot, and it feels like, I don't know, it kind of like lose the meaning. And I like this idea of having a community where you can support each other, learn with each other. And in terms of creating this community or finding those people, which tool do you think is the best? You mentioned like LinkedIn. Do you think LinkedIn is the place where you should connect with people and build this community?
I would use a multiplicity of tools. So I think step one is that you need to establish a consistent and clear, persistent image of who you are as a person. So if you are using some like silly username for your Twitter, or you have like some like joke Twitter handle, knock it off. Get your real name on there. If a real job is going to hire you, they're going to need to know your real name. I understand that with trans people, that is like an extra layer of consideration. But if people do not see a consistent image of who you are, it makes it harder for them to do that initial assessment of who is this person and what do they need. So I think focusing on clarity, and I would hit all of these platforms at once. I would at the very least have a Twitter account. If you say that you want to be a combat designer, I would challenge you to go out and follow 100 people who actually have the job that you want, so that you can slowly start to immerse yourself in the lexicon and the language and in the terminology that that discipline relies on to do its job. The more that you understand your discipline, the greater that you are able to ask better and better questions. So initially, your first question might be like, hey, is this a good resume? And that's kind of a worthless question, because the better question is, hey, does this resume look like it is appropriately prepared candidate for this specific job? So getting away from this concept of resumes as your life history and more as resumes as an immediate, clear, and well-organized presentation of how you understand the kinds of problems that your discipline is going to be responsible for solving, and communicating how you've actually solved those problems before. That's like, you know, a little bit about resumes, but like having a clear and consistent presence through Twitter and LinkedIn, and having your LinkedIn be linked to your Twitter, and having your Twitter be to your LinkedIn, and then going on LinkedIn and finding out what companies do you actually want to work for. Like, you get to answer that question. You get to ask yourself, what kind of companies do I want to work for? And you do not need to just target the AAA companies out there. The PlayStations and the EAs and the Ubisofts of the world and the Riots, they are large companies. They have a lot of visibility. And there are people who work in the game industry for 6 years and they still try to get a job at that company. But you don't need to work at Blizzard for your first job in the game industry. And if anything, like, I want you to learn from me in that my first job in the game industry was at a company called Beamable, and I'd never heard of them. They were a technology startup that made the back-end software that Unity game developers rely on for live services. And that company paid me as a starting salary $80,000 a year with full benefits, a full-time employee, not contract. And that was at least 20 to 25 grand a year more than what PlayStation would have paid me. So I think that having real clarity about what you're looking for and understanding your discipline and having done the work and the research and established a community of peers, of people who have the job that you want, so that they can help you validate whether or not you're actually prepared for the role that you're applying for. Because there may be certain aspects to the role that you're looking for that you just don't know, because you're just, you haven't had the job yet. But the game industry is really special because there's a lot of people out there sharing knowledge, and it's all for free, and it's on YouTube, and it's in panels and podcasts. And so it's like growing your awareness through community tools like Discord is a really special place. If you have a list of companies you want to work at, go to that company's LinkedIn page, find 5 people that have the job that you want, and follow their LinkedIn account. Because when they have job opportunities present, they're going to be sharing them and they'll come up in your feed. And that's an opportune time for you to reply to those posts and be like, hey, I'm actually really excited for this post and I feel like I'm a strong candidate. Just wanted to let you know I'm applying. Any little edge that you can get to help people see your humanity beyond just, oh, here is another job applicant that did not read the job description. I think being clear in your communication and helping reducing the friction that a hiring manager experiences when they have to go through a stack of 800 applications.
Amazing, amazing tips. I really like what you said about making stronger questions and totally like asking, what do you think about my resume? It's a very vague question. If the person doesn't know what you're looking for,
yes,
your industry, they don't have much to say.
Yes.
They are basically looking at the design and might say, oh, it's cool. That is not usable at all.
No. And I think that people underestimate what is actually going on psychologically when you ask someone a vague question. When you ask someone a vague question, it's actually like really threatening for that person, because when a person genuinely wants to help and then you set them up for failure by asking them a question that you haven't even given them enough information for them to feel empowered to answer that question, it signals that like really like subconsciously, they're going to feel like you don't respect their time. But if you show up and you're like, hey, I'm looking for jobs in production, and these are the job titles that I'm looking for, and there may be other job titles in this discipline that I'm not aware of. And if there are, I'd really love to know. And also, I'm applying for these 5 jobs, and here's my Notion page where I have the applications all cataloged. Like, do you have 30 minutes anytime over the next few months where we could chat on Zoom for just 30 minutes? I'd really love to like get to talk to a person who has my dream job and learn a little bit more about what's expected of a candidate.
And you increase a lot your chances of getting a yes, because you basically gave all the information the person needs in order to decide if they will be able to help you or not. Because sometimes they might not know, right?
Exactly.
And they're like, oh, this person looks awesome, or I have no idea what they are looking for. I'm not sure if I can help. I'm not going to waste my time even like replying because I'm super busy. Incredible. I'm loving those tips. You shared that the most important thing is to stay organized when looking for a job. How do we stay organized? You mentioned the calendar. How do you use the calendar?
Yes.
Share with us.
Yes, absolutely. So this is perhaps the single most important thing that has changed my life over the last 2.5 years is understanding how I can leverage tools like calendar to work in my favor. So if I'm looking for a job in games, I might be in a precarious situation where I don't have a job at the moment. And if you don't have a job at the moment and you're trying to get a new job in a new industry, that's really challenging. And so for any person that's in that situation, I would counsel you to get as much peer feedback as possible and get a strong understanding if you are ready, if you have done the work to demonstrate the skills that are translatable for that job. Because if you're trying to get a job and you're under a time crunch, like that's going to be really hard. And even then, when you don't have a job, I think I've gone through like long periods of unemployment myself, sometimes as long as like 6 months or 8 months without a job. And it can be really challenging on the soul and can feel really threatening. And we have like grow up in this society where we are taught that our value is tied to our ability to produce. And so it can be really discouraging for our spirit. And this is why community is so important, because there's other people as well that are suffering through job loss or layoffs or all sorts of reasons, or maybe the company folded or the project canceled or their contract didn't get renewed. So this process of looking for jobs, like getting good or getting effective for yourself at managing your time and attention and your stamina when you are going to engage in this research to have a clear understanding of what's expected of you, like that's a really arduous effort. And so the first thing I do with a calendar when it's blank is I try to eliminate as much blank space as possible. If I'm going to sleep 7 to 8 hours a day, I'm going to make a recurring calendar invite. I'm going to block out that time. If it takes me an hour to like wake up and get running in the day, I'm going to block off an hour after that sleep schedule. If I'm going to eat lunch, I'm blocking off that time. If I'm going to go get ready for bed and brush my teeth and shower, I block off an hour. And then before you know, you start to eliminate that white space that is just pure ambiguity, and you start to get a clear sense of what is your budget? What is the time budget that you are working with? And then maybe you have a day job. So you put that on your calendar, get it into a recurring calendar invite so that you have to think about it. And this is where calendars come in really helpful, where if you know that you want to work at these 30 companies, maybe right now those companies don't have an opportunity open for you. But what you can do is if you use a tool like Notion and you use a template, like I have a template called Job Manager, which Thaisa can link to this podcast. But if you use a template like Notion, where that is a place where you can catalog where are the communities that you're going to be touching base with, you can put a link to your Notion in your calendar invite and block out a couple hours here, a couple hours there, make it recurring so you don't have to think about it. And then you have designated and protected the time required to do the research. If you do not protect the time to do the thing that you say you're going to do, almost guarantee you, as someone with severe ADHD, it will not get done. Or you will burn yourself out because you're going to be spending 3 hours, 4 hours at a time, and you're not understanding that you may be asking the wrong questions. You may not be asking in the right places. You may be applying to jobs that you have no business applying to because you're just, you are lacking that peer review, a situation where someone who has the job that you want, who knows you as a person, can look at what you're applying to and tell you, this makes sense. And if you don't get invited to interviews, that's okay. But if you apply to the same level of job and you're putting in the work to do the research for the company and you're getting that application that you're going to submit validated by people who have the job that you want, like, and you're still not getting the job, then like that's where it's important to check in with your community, to start talking to recruiters and start talking to people who hire for the job that you want. And that's where you can start to build up that empathy.
Yeah, incredible. And I like the tip for the calendar, because when you are like adding events to your calendar, what you're doing is just like planning your day, right?
Yeah.
And I think when you are in between jobs, one thing that people might miss than having a full time is the structure.
Yes.
Because you do certain things at the same time and you have like this time, 9 to 5, whatever is your schedule, and you have the structure. But when you are in between jobs, it feels like you have all the time in the world, but in fact, you don't. You have the same amount of hours as every day.
And also that, like I was saying before about how maybe this list of companies you want to work for, maybe they don't have a job opening for you right then, but you can just set a recurring calendar invite that repeats once every 3 weeks. And once every 3 weeks, you have an hour protected on a Saturday, a Sunday, or some other evening where you're going to open up your Notion and you're going to one by one open up the career pages of all the companies you want to work for. And once every 3 weeks, you now have a habit where you are casting your radar and checking, are there opportunities available? And that's a great way to regiment your process so that you know that's your protected time where you're going to look for jobs. And then on this hour is when you're going to do research about your discipline. And maybe you're going to watch GDC videos or YouTube videos that talk about your discipline and what's the minimum requirements? What is the minimum things that a portfolio for your discipline needs to communicate?
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. This accountability is great. And this process of researching and building your community. And when you're talking with your community, I think if you are someone who is helping another, if you feel they did the research and they're asking difficult questions, questions that easily you're not going to find if you Google it, you're like, damn it, this person is really invested. I want to help them because they did the work. And I think we all feel that, right? We all feel that. So this is a really, really good tip.
That's the thing too, is that like every game developer has suffered through this process. And some of us have had more privilege than others, but in general, like 9.5 people out of 10 want to share with other people and they want to see other people succeed. But also if you show up to them and maybe you meet with them and you ask them for advice, like don't let that be the only time you talk with them. You can end that conversation with a clear process of always asking these contacts for the opportunity to speak with them again after you've had time to work on your resume or after you've had time to research. And you can say, hey, would you feel comfortable if I reached out in a couple months to get your feedback on some other job applications that I'm preparing for? It's a very open invitation, and most people will be willing to make time for it. But it's about providing the specific, clear, actionable ask.
Yes. And one thing that just came to my mind, because I do mentorship as well from time to time. And one thing that I would say, at least for the folks that I work with, almost 90%, they don't follow up in a sense like, for example, we talked about resume and we agreed on changes they need to make.
Yep.
Most of the people, they don't go back to you and say, oh, I made those changes.
Exactly.
I learned more about that. That course that you told me, that book, I read the book I really like. So I think this is another thing for folks who are helping others. I think it's really good to also know how this person is doing, if they like the book or if they took action. So it's really good to feel like, oh, I'm actually helping this person, is succeeding, or I'm helping them. So I think it's a really great feeling that people should follow up more often.
And that's where a calendar comes into play, right? Like if I meet with you, Thaisa, and I'm trying to get a job and you give me feedback and you say, okay, you can make XYZ changes on your resume, then after that call, I'm going to immediately plan out on my calendar. I'm going to page forward throughout the next few weeks and I'm going to dedicate space throughout my day that is protected to actually do those changes. And then when I show up for myself and I protect that time, then that helps me with the follow through. And then maybe I have another reminder for myself in 5 weeks to reach out to you. And this time when I'm reaching out to you, I'm showing up as someone who has done their homework. And I have demonstrated that our last call brought me value. And here I want to show you how I've applied the knowledge and wisdom that you've shared with me as a means of both demonstrating respect and gratitude for the time that you took to share your knowledge, and also as a means to like ask you clear and better questions. And that way it gives both parties a sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And for the folks who want to help another who is currently looking for a job, what's the advice would you give to this person who wants to help?
I would counsel you to think about what is sustainable, that mm-hmm. like creating a sustainable relationship and establishing clear expectations about what that relationship is and what it is not. That if you want to meet once a month for 3 months, like give yourself some end date of that support. So that encourages the person to make the most out of that time instead of having it be this ongoing relationship where like they can just, I'll do it later, and they can kind of take it a little bit more casual. Like I think that people can make real progress, but it does take accountability. It does take negotiating what those expectations are. So when I first meet someone and we're having a conversation to determine if like we're going to have a mentorship relationship, I tell them that like, okay, so like I want to help. Here are my goals. This is how I know I'm doing a good job. If I give you advice and you don't follow it, or if you are not teachable, that provides a lot of friction for me. And it makes me feel like maybe you don't trust me or you don't respect the things that I'm saying. And so I think vulnerable and transparent conversations with the mentee about like what is in your capacity and establishing the expectation that like, hey, here are our calendar invites. Please show up on time. Please don't cancel last minute. Please honor the time agreement that you have made with me so that I can feel confident in that I've planned my day to the fullest. So there's a lot of ways that like the mentor can encourage a positive relationship by being clear about their expectations to the mentee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I like that, like setting the expectations, and also maybe something that is obvious for you might not be for the other person. And especially, I don't know, like maybe different cultures, maybe they have like different styles. I definitely feel that a little bit since I live and work in the United States for the past 9 years. And sometimes when I work with folks from Brazil, I feel like, oh my God, I forgot about that. Like, and sometimes are silly things, like how close people are, and they send emails with like hugs and kisses. And myself, that I'm not used to that anymore, sometimes I see like hugs and kisses in like a professional email, like what? And then I realize, no, it's okay. This is actually very nice. You should send hugs and kisses as well.
And I think that like that's the really beautiful thing too, is that like if you're someone who's looking for work in the game industry, there are people out there who look like you or have had similar shared life experiences with you. If you're trans, there are dedicated communities where trans game developers support each other. If you are Black, if you are Latinx, if you are a woman, there are communities, there are rich, vibrant communities that check in with each other each day. And so you creating a consistent schedule for yourself where like maybe at this hour on every Sunday, you're going to show up to the community. You're going to do the emotional labor of like scrolling up and reading what were the last things people said and like showing up to community events and making it clear that you are a person who is in need and what your needs actually are.
Yes. Being open and ask for help, it's very powerful. I actually just interviewed someone for the podcast. And actually, I'm going to ask you this question as well, because I think it's very interesting. But I asked her about like what she would say to her younger self. And she said that she would ask for help more often, because doing things alone, it's not a badge of honor, and it's so much fun, and you learn so much, like, doing things with others. But maybe when we are younger, or maybe it was the way, like, we were raised in society, I have no idea. We get the sense that we need to do everything alone. And ask for help, it's not okay. But in fact, I think, like, to your point, like, the way you ask the questions and when you are transparent, very clear about what you need, and if you did your research, of course, people, they are going to help you because they know what you need. They know how they can help you. So it's so much easier for them as well.
And even just, like, getting things out of your head and stop being so disorganized and, like, actually writing down your questions, and then every time someone gives you answers, write down their responses to that question, and pretty soon you will find that you don't need to ask that question anymore.
Yeah.
And you'll also find that as you talk to people who have the job that you want, they may say things or give advice or suggestions that doesn't mesh well with what you intuit is what you should do. And that's actually okay too. That, like, you may find that you actually have a clear idea of what you need to do, or you have a way that feels authentic and true for how you're going to function. And so, like, I think that's also a really beautiful thing that comes out of these kinds of conversations, is that other people may not have all the answers, and that's okay. But when you ask a variety of diverse people who all have the job that you want, you'll start to fill in these contextual, cultural gaps about what is this discipline? What teams do they work with? What tools do they rely on? What does interview questions look like for that discipline? If there were three top skills that that discipline needs to have, what are they? So writing these questions down on paper and getting them out of your head is so important.
Yeah, and then you start asking more challenging questions that are very interesting as well, I imagine, for the person receiving it, because they're like, oh, actually, I need to think about it. Can you give me a moment? And then you can go deeper.
Yes.
And in the end, you're also like, oh, this person is smart. I like that. I like this question. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I'm loving this conversation. Thank you so much for sharing and being so open with us. And if you could turn back in time and talk to your 18 years old self, what would you tell her?
Use a calendar. Just use a calendar. Just, like, just fucking do it, please. Like, I resisted using a calendar for so long. I didn't get it. And imagine this scenario where you are working at a day job. You've blocked off your sleep. You've blocked off your lunch hour. You've blocked off your working hours. And you start logging on your calendar where your time is going. And then in 3 months, you know, if you've marked out, like, all the times that you've spent time doing research, maybe you find that you're only actually doing, like, 2 to 3 hours a week of research, and maybe you can afford to do more. Or maybe you're doing too much and you need to dial it back, or you need to take a break. But having calendars at all means that you get to have living visibility into where your time is going.
I love that. I really like this. That's incredible. Are you the person that, because I'm this person with my friends, for example, I schedule brunch and then I send them a calendar invite. And sometimes they're like, oh, thank you. Or sometimes they're not expecting it at all because they're like, oh, it's a brunch between friends. I'm like, no, I need a calendar invite.
Well, and calendars are so useful too, because, like, you can put address information in calendars so that at the last minute, people aren't going, oh, where's the address, or where are we meeting? It's like, no, it's all in the calendar invite. And if you're meeting with someone who has the job that you want, you can put a link to the Zoom in the calendar invite, and you can already put an agenda and a list of questions so that your conversation is focused, and so that both parties feel safe and secure about what they can expect out of that conversation, and you're going to have more impactful conversations. So calendars are a beautiful way to be accountable for your actions.
Yes. And especially it's a good tip for your mentor, right? If you schedule some time with them, they are busy. They might be talking with a lot of people, but if you put the agenda, what you're, like, thinking about, discussing the goals, they might forget your name or who are you, you know, but then you're having the meeting, they check and they're like, oh, I remember her. We are going to talk about X, Y, and Z because it is in the calendar. So it's so much easier because people are busy, right? Sometimes they have back-to-back meetings. They need to be able to see what is going to happen because they might forget. Because especially now, I think like the work environment is a lot more intense, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So we are getting to the end of this episode. I'm very, very excited with this conversation. I'm sure it's going to give folks a lot of insights and structure for their process of finding a new job or of finding their dream job. And I wanted to ask you as well, which resource helped you in your journey? Do you have any advice for us in terms? It can be anything, a book, a movie, podcast, like anything.
The thing that helped me the most was Notion. I like struggled for a long time where I would be applying for jobs and the content that I was submitting for that job lived and died in the moment. And only that employer had the record of what I submitted for my cover letter or the kind of language that I used in my resume. So getting away from that and allowing you to preserve a historical record of what you are applying to and where you are applying, that's where you can start to build up a real functional archive of not just what one job is asking of the discipline that you're working for, but what are 30 jobs looking for? And then you start to develop a strong functional fluency for the kind of language that shows up in those job descriptions. And then after a certain amount of time, you can write your own damn job description for your discipline. So that's been a really powerful tool for me. And it's a tool that I use every day with my mentees, where I encourage them that, like, if you're applying for a job, I need you to copy the text of the job description because that job description will not always be up. But I guarantee you that after you've preserved the text of like 30 job applications over the course of however long that you're applying for, pretty soon the act of applying to that job, that turnaround time is going to become quicker and quicker because you already have a clear understanding of what people are asking for. And then when you preserve that job text, you're also able to like highlight and bold and highlight and comment on it and ask specific questions. So it's not all living in your head. So really getting out of your head and using the digital tools that are at your disposal as a functional workspace. That's what changed my life. That's what's changed the lives of my mentees. And I think that's what can really change other people's lives who are looking for work.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, because when you're just reading 50, whatever number of job descriptions, it's a different experience than like copying and pasting to a document where you can check descriptions from time to time. And you might see some patterns in terms of like, oh, they are looking for this software that I don't know. Maybe I should learn because this X amount of like jobs, they are looking for this one or this specific skill. Maybe I should highlight this skill in my resume. So you can start to maybe like block and create like different resumes,
yes,
based on those types of job descriptions. That like reading it, it's impossible to make this connection, I feel.
Yeah.
Incredible. I love your tips. Thank you so much. And I'm going to leave the last minutes for you to share anything you want to share and also where people can find you.
Yeah, so everyone can find me on Twitter or LinkedIn. Twitter's probably the best place to get a hold of me, and you can just tweet at me or my DMs are open. But my Twitter is at Javiera, J-A-V-I-E-R-A, and then my old last name, Begazo, B-E-G-A-Z-O, Javiera Begazo. And the thing I want to tell you is just nourish your stamina. Do not lose hope. It just takes one yes. It just takes one yes. And then you're in. And I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that just because you got in once that you're going to be able to stay in, it's going to be a challenge to like stay in, but it's possible. And I cannot express how powerful it is to have the labor that you do to survive in capitalism align with the thing that brings you spiritual fulfillment. So it's worth it. And I want you to remember that, like, you are worth it.
Thank you. That was beautiful.